I have always been one to love the cycle of the year. I got this from my mother, who had a massive box of decorations for every holiday, from Halloween to Christmas to St. Patrick's Day to Easter. And I loved the less flashy holidays too. I grew up Presbyterian, and so every year in November, our church observed Scottish Sunday. The tartans would come out, every variation of plaid, and the bagpipes would come, walking down the aisle with their full regalia, playing Scotland the Brave and Amazing Grace. I still get teary-eyed whenever I hear Amazing Grace on the bagpipes, even if the lyrics don't quite resonate with me in the same way anymore. Those were some of the key yearly rituals of my childhood, and they connect somewhere deep in me, somewhere deeper than literal memory itself. They form a part of my identity. And so part of what I hope to do today is to prompt all of us to think about what are the yearly observances that have been most important to each of us, that mark the passage of time and help us make memories. Are they the Thanksgiving dinner, or Christmas morning, or Passover Seder, or July 4th fireworks? I've been thinking about this in particular since I've had kids, who you saw up with me earlier. And one of my opportunities, it feels, is to provide a sense of ritual for the kids. On a daily basis, whether it's our grace at dinner or poem at bedtime, and on a yearly basis, with the special events that they will remember as the culture they were raised with as children. There are plenty of holidays that they will experience no matter what, and certainly being a part of a congregation like UUCPA helps with this immensely. I love that in just one service, they experience the stories of Christmas, Hanukkah, and Kwanzaa all in one each December. And that they then get to look forward to the Easter egg hunt that happened just 2 weeks ago and other special events. I've so appreciated the solstice and equinox celebrations. Thank you to Edie Keating and Rebecca Shapley and others. In fact, the winter solstice service this year was so beautiful, I couldn't get over how both my 5-year-old and my 2-year-old were lulled into a peaceful quiet during the guided meditation. Magical. One of my newer favorite traditions, which I wasn't raised with, but encountered for the first time here, is the tradition of the maypole. I've loved dancing it with my young kids in my arms these last 2 years. And I am immensely grateful to folks like Eric Beer and Paul Koska and Robert Neff for keeping these traditions alive. 20 years now at UUCPA this year. I think that deserves a round of applause, please, for everybody. The maypole is such a beautiful representation of what we're doing here at UUCPA. With its multicolored ribbons intertwined, it celebrates diversity. With music and dancing, it's an embodied whole person celebration. And at times it can feel so chaotic, no offense, Eric. When you're in it and you forget if you're supposed to go over or under the next ribbon, it can seem like there's no possible way that it's going to turn out right in the end, whatever that means. But then no matter what, somehow it always looks amazing. Like the weave that emerges was meant to be, imperfection and all. Now that's a metaphor for the beloved community, if I've ever heard one. But what does the maypole really mean? I've been wondering that the last few years, and I participated in the maypole dance and imagined it becoming one of the important yearly celebrations for our kids. I think it's easy to get a surface level experience of some of these holidays without connecting with the deeper roots or purpose of the ritual. So that's where I come to you today, having done some research. You're welcome. Like any pre-Christian pagan celebration, the origins are always going to be fuzzy. But here's at least some of what we know. May Day celebrates the midway point between the spring equinox and the summer solstice. So if you're living life by the cycles of the earth, this matters and is going to be recognized in many different ways in many different places around the world. In ancient Rome, there was a yearly festival called Floralia, after the goddess of flowers and spring. Then there is the Gaelic festival of Beltane, documented as early as 900 CE, but presumably much, much older. Bonfires are a hallmark of Beltane, and maybe that's a ritual we introduce at another time. And then there are many different traditions, May Day folk festivals in Central and Northern Europe. The maypole is often associated with England, and the English version of the maypole dance is indeed what we're going to do after service today. But it has roots in Germany, in the Walpurgis Festival, and the Maybaum, the May tree, and in Sweden for midsummer. In India, in Tamil Nadu, there is the Penal Kolattam, usually danced in November around Diwali. In the 1600s, European settlers brought the maypole tradition to the Americas, and it was popular in colonial times, and it still is in places in the Caribbean, for example. In New England, the Puritans even banned it for a little while in 1600s, which is how you know when something is really fun. That's the mark. Understanding of the symbolism of the maypole can vary from the trunk of a tree of life to the axis of the world to even a more phallic interpretation. Certainly, the theme of fertility is a popular one for spring holidays and absolutely has a place in May Day, a holiday that celebrates Earth's abundance and colors. At the beginning, at least, practically speaking, or at the very least, practically speaking, the maypole is ideal for hanging garlands and being the center of dances and celebrations. And that has made it a popular part of May Day observances, in addition to rituals such as the welcoming of the sun that Sarah spoke of earlier. All of this matters to me on a spiritual level, as someone who identifies as humanist and religious naturalist. What I connect with theologically is a belief in the inherent value of every human and all beings, and with a sense of awe and wonder at the universe. I also like to call myself a reverent agnostic, with an enthusiastic not knowing. This is important for me as an interfaith chaplain and educator within spiritual care services. I am often called to enter into the worldviews of people from many different traditions, and I can do that with integrity and openness. But in my personal and family life, I also seek an opportunity for groundedness in what is really true for me. The cycles of the earth are an ideal source of that. In springtime, there is the beauty and life of the natural world, and there is joy in the days getting longer and brighter. That is something to believe in. And then I read writings of neo-pagans like Starhawk and others, and I find an even deeper message in observances of these earth-based cycles. May Day itself is exactly 6 months after Halloween, after Dia de los Muertos, after All Souls. I hadn't thought about that before. But it's the exact inverse of the holidays that are oriented towards a recognition of death, of ancestors, of loss. Right now, we're in the flip side. The season of birth, of living, of earthly abundance. And yet the realities of our lives are not always so aligned. We may be facing the realities of loss and grief. And in general, our political and environmental reality has so much bleakness these days. It can be hard to know which thing to grieve or be outraged by at any given time. There are so many things to be devastated by at this point. And grief and outrage are important. But it doesn't have to be paralysis. The energy of May Day isn't melancholy, it's action. Which is why I think it's so fitting that it's also recognized in many places, in many countries around the world, as International Workers' Day. It's a day of celebration and protest. In 1886, it was chosen by the American Federation of Labor, now known as the AFL-CIO, for a worker strike. The central demand, among other things, was an 8-hour workday. Thank goodness for that effort and sacrifice over many generations. And we find ourselves at another crossroads today. This May 1st was the May Day protests. I imagine a number of us were here, a number of us here were there, were a part of those or either supported them in some way. I was there with my family. Joan Baez even sang at the event in Mountain View. This is a scary and critical time. Throughout these last few months, the San Francisco-based author Rebecca Solnit has been a North Star for me. On November 7th, she posted, "They want you to feel powerless and to surrender and to let them trample everything, and you are not going to let them. You are not giving up, and neither am I. The fact that we cannot save everything does not mean that we cannot save anything, and everything we can save is worth saving." Thank you to all of those of you who are showing up and contributing in whatever way feels appropriate. Whether it's protests or postcards or phone calls to representatives or donations or other forms of solidarity. Even being here today in person or online and supporting this community is part of that effort. I am sure we represent a plurality of views in this congregation, but I also know that we are united in shared values of interdependence, of justice, and of equity. And those values are desperately needed in this hurting world of ours, especially when paired with the power of action and the core of love. So let us enjoy this May Day together. Let us welcome the longer days and the beautiful flowers and the rainbow of ribbons. And let us act together, weaving a community that will support ourselves and our young ones for many years to come. Amen, and blessed be.